Welcome to episode 155 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week we talked to Peter Fisk, who was working on Vista Smalltalk a couple of years, dropped out of sight, and is now back working on GWT Smalltalk, which is running Smalltalk on top of the Google Wave application engine. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group of Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. This is James Robertson, Syncom Small Talk Product Evangelist. I'm here with Michael Lucas Smith, our lead on the Web Velocity project.
G'day.
And also Peter Fisk, who's now working on Google Wave Small Talk.
Hi.
And actually, Peter's been around Small Talk for a while. I guess I should ask this first. A couple of years ago, you made kind of a splash in the Small Talk community with the Vista Small Talk thing.
Right, yeah.
And then, far as we could tell, you fell into a pothole somewhere. So,
Yeah, what happened with that? Microsoft was bringing out this .NET thing, and I started working on that around 2000 when they first announced it. And that was before they had any tools. And I thought it was a really exciting concept, this byte engine concept that they were going to port everywhere. Now, they worked on it, and about 2005, I was showing that it would work in a browser with a scripting language. What happened was that they sort of kept extending it. They never deployed it, really. They kept extending it so that now it's something like 4.5 megabyte download for the .NET libraries. They have this dynamic language runtime, which is another 1.5 megs, I think. But then they have their languages on top of that. So for somebody to actually run something in a browser, you have to have 3 downloads. And people just aren't doing that. So I just gave up on it.
I'm going to say, whenever one of the Silverlight videos pops up, I feel quite offended that I'm asked to download all this stuff just to watch a video. So
right,
I just won't do it. I'll just close it.
If there were one thing, you know, that might be acceptable. But when you have a 4.5 meg download followed by a 1.5 meg download followed by, I think, their Python language or something like another megabyte, then you get into scripting. I mean,
it's a bit worse than that, too, because this is Microsoft, so every six months they'll ask you to download something again.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. You get past 3 Microsoft downloads, and then you get to my stuff. Well, I said about 4 years ago, when I first got the Vista Smalltalk working in a browser, and to me that was where it should reside, I said in my blog that Microsoft had a window of opportunity. It might have been a year or 2 years, that they could widely deploy this thing or they'd be surpassed, they'd be bypassed by advancing technology elsewhere. And what's happened in the last year, certainly, is the JavaScript has gotten enormously faster, and we have HTML5 now that basically has scalable vector graphics just like .NET, and there's no reason for .NET to be deployed anymore. So they've lost the market. They had it, but they lost it.
Did they have it, really? I mean,
well, they could put it this way. They could have had it. And Microsoft, the way they've been handling this, the whole .NET, and remember, they started this in 2000. So they've had years and years to work on this, and they have all kinds of technology. But it was like IBM when IBM brought out the PC. They looked at it as sort of an extension to mainframes. And Microsoft has always viewed .NET as sort of the way of putting an office, the office desktop, across all kinds of platforms and sealing up the market. But they made it so difficult to deploy that nobody's used it. Like Silverlight is only in, I think, less than 1/4 of machines, and it's declining. So it seems to be declining. So they've been bypassed by HTML5 and the new JavaScripts that are much faster. So I think that they've missed the browser market.
So you think they had an opportunity to get into the space?
Oh, yeah, they had it. They had it.
And for multiple reasons that you kind of touched on, it just went by them. kind of while they were busy.
This is in pretty classic Microsoft, actually. A lot of their technologies they launch like this really do just flip by. And the weird thing is you'll always see some large government department somewhere pick it up and demand to use it for the next 10 years, and that's the only place you'll ever see it in use.
Yeah, well, large corporations like Shell is using this internally. .NET is deployed throughout Shell and so on. But, I mean, and they have projects that are starting to take advantage of it.
Microsoft will call that a success, yeah. Right? They'll say...
Victims. Oh, yeah, yeah. They got the corporate market. I'm not... They've got the corporate market sewed up for a lot of their products, like their mail and so on. But, and spreadsheets, Excel spreadsheets, I mean, a lot of people have all kinds of things written for that. But the exciting market is the browser market. We can get into that, about how you do peer-to-peer applications.
There's three sectors now. Like, traditionally you would think there's two sectors, government and private sector, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now there's definitely three sectors. There's, like, the mass populace on the internet, the corporate sector, and the government sector.
Well, I looked up the numbers the other day, and I think there's something like 1.6 billion people on the internet now.
1.6 billion?
Yeah, that was 2008. And some areas like China are just exploding. I think they went I forget the numbers. It might have been something like 10 million 10 years ago, and now it's something like 350 million. I mean, China's just amazing.
I saw a presentation on TED where they were talking about the number of network nodes on the internet. A couple of years ago was then the same number of network nodes in the human brain.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think I saw that.
In a few more years, the internet will be the size of two brains, and then four brains.
Oh yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep growing.
So to take this back a little bit. So a couple of years ago, when you were working on Vista Smalltalk, you had gotten to a point where you thought you had something that was potentially useful. But then, I guess from what you were saying, you kind of thought that the market was moving past the useful nature of what you were doing. So then you kind of went dark for a couple of years until all of a sudden I noticed that you popped up. I mean, literally, I just noticed you popped up with this Google Wave thing. So what were you doing in that interval between those two?
Oh, I was doing regular regular programming type jobs. I was out in Calgary for a couple of years working for Shell. So I was basically doing, consulting. Earning a living.
Yeah. No. That's fine. It's just the interesting part about it was there were a whole bunch of, I guess Smalltalk has as many conspiracy theorists as anywhere else. There were a whole bunch of people who were convinced that somebody had bought you out so that you wouldn't bring thing to market. It was just confusing.
No. It's, you can't program for a market that isn't there. And, the market that I saw, and I actually had it working in, I think it was 2005, when they had a 1 megabyte download, you could download it and run something in your browser. And I was very excited at that point, but then they kept expanding it, adding in their own stuff, having their own competing languages and so on.
They
never made it cross-platform. And the other thing is I downloaded some Microsoft tools a couple months ago, and I start using them, but after 2 days it starts saying you have like 10 more tries and then you have to pay for it. Well, I said, the hell with that. So they've missed the browser market, the mass market, the 1.6 billion they've missed. They do have the corporate market, just like IBM kept the corporate market. When they brought out the PC, they had their corporate market.
Okay.
And they never really lost it.
And now a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. Software project managers often have the strange concept that software developers are interchangeable and one is the same as another. The reality is much trickier. Different developers have different skills and work in different ways. A time estimate produced by one developer may be quite different than the same time estimate by another developer. Moreover, as you learn more about the project you're working on, you can more quickly identify problems and dependencies that the new developers on the project can't. As a matter of practice, you should try to distribute the knowledge of the project throughout the team. Don't expect, however, that you can just get another developer in to take over some work without having a lot of headaches and overruns. It takes time to learn the software and the environment. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
Let's talk about this new shiny thing called...
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're here for. I just wanted to get that background out of the way. But let's go on to the Google Wave stuff. Where did that come from?
What's the G? Actually, you're calling it GWT Smalltalk. What's the T?
Okay, well, that's a Google Web Toolkit.
Uh-huh. But anyway, Google Web Toolkit, that's not Wave. That's a Java thing.
No, sorry. the clients that they're building. There's a confusion in the tech, in the terminology here, because Google is bringing out this thing they call Wave. Now, there are two parts to it. There's going to be the client that you download, and they're calling that Wave. Okay, that's the Wave client. And then there's the Wave API. And the Wave API runs on the Google infrastructure. And let's just get the client out of the way. The client is built in this Google Wave toolkit, which is a Java compiler. It compiles down to JavaScript. And I use that for building the GWT Smalltalk.
So you built this in Java then?
Yeah. Well, so I thought
the Google, because you seem to be saying that you're hosting this in the Google App Engine, and I thought
that's
that
correct,
was all
yeah.
Python.
No. They brought out a Java version of the App Engine in April.
Ah, okay.
April this year. It doesn't matter. The back end, whether it's Python or Java, doesn't really matter. The Google Wave Toolkit has been out since, I think, 2007, something like that, maybe late 2006, and it compiles Java like you set it up in Eclipse, and you compile Java down to JavaScript.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
writing JavaScript at any scale is terrible. Just you go nuts writing JavaScript.
Yeah, I think that's changing. Certainly people are much more aware of how you should write JavaScript now. A lot of people were just writing scripts, and then those scripts just became bigger scripts. Sort of like writing a Bash script and getting carried away with it.
Yeah, but Bash scripts, you know, it depends upon the size. If you write a Bash script of 100 lines, you can manage it. If you have 10,000 lines, you can't. So,
yeah, you have to change programming styles. It's like if you start using jQuery, if you use a jQuery style, you can suddenly expand much further, or MooTools. You can do
or MooTools or Prototype or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're just using straight scripting, then you'll end up with code like bottom feeder.
Well, there is the issue. There are a number of toolkits out there, a number of libraries. I mean, ext.js is one that I was looking at intensively. Smart Client, TIBCO, jQuery Protocol, all these. But when you have a library, you can't refactor it. I mean, you basically have a library, you learn the calls and so on. But if you have anything serious that you want to do, you have to install the whole library. Like, you have to download the whole library, and then you write your little script on top of it and so on. But if you can't do a refactoring. And the thing is that you can't optimize the code. In GWT, or what I'm calling, GWT, Google Windows Toolkit, you write it in Java, and then you can refactor all the code in Eclipse. And then when the compiler goes through it, it eliminates all the dead code. Anything that you're not calling gets taken out, so that what you get is a very optimized JavaScript out. And it's also condensed, I mean, very short, obfuscated, I think is the term, where you're putting very, very short names and you're getting rid of all the spaces and that kind of stuff. Mm. So you can't do that kind of stuff by hand. I mean, you could theoretically, but if you had an infinite amount of time, but you can't. A compiler is much better.
So it's written in Java, running on Google App Engine.
Well, yeah, okay, the server side, yeah, it's written in Java on the App Engine, yeah.
Then there's the actual Google Wave protocol. What parts of that have you done?
Well, I'm using just XMPP at the moment. Now, I have the libraries installed for both XMPP and Wave. Wave, of course, is the new protocol. XMPP used to be called Jabber. So
Jabber's always no. XMPP was always the real name.
Okay, well, Jabber was what I used to call it.
That's the client. Jabber on top of XMPP is the chat paradigm, the IM.
I always looked at Jabber as being a protocol rather than a client. Anyway, that's beside the point. XMPP, yeah, you're correct. That's the proper name. It always has been. The XMPP, now what I've put in the XMPP so far is just I've been able to send the messages from the Smalltalk client and receive messages into the Smalltalk client.
Now, I saw you got a screenshot of that, but how do you do it? So if I've got this thing up in front of me, how do I send the message?
Oh, okay. The name of it is, you'd be in gwt-smalltalk.appspot.com.
Yep.
So you'd send a message, an instant message, to gwt-smalltalk@appspot.com. And if you prefix the message by an at sign, you'll see it'll actually interpret the script.
I should be able to fire up iChat with my Google Chat because that's XMPP. and I should be able to send a message, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The easiest thing is to send yourself a message first. Just open up a workspace window and do XMPP in capital letters. Yeah, in capital letters. Send, colon, and then put in your, as a string, put in your address, and then message, colon, and put in the message in as a string. Yeah, and you should see it hit your client.
Nothing. Okay.
Nothing. Well, I think
the problem with the iChat is you have to do the Jabber protocol of adding buddies and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm using it through Google Talk. Now, when I send myself a message the first time, it says, you know, there's an incoming message. Do you want to add this person to your contact list? And I say yes. So to get peer-to-peer working, which is really what I want to do, you know, so that one session in a browser, that's GWT Smalltalk, running to another GWT Smalltalk session, I have to look further into the XMPP API, and I have to, you know, add people to the contact list and so on. So I haven't done that. That's probably a day's work or so.
I've just fired up Gmail, so that I can. I'll try that script again.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
And let's see if that pops up in my Gmail this time.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, probably need to check my settings to make sure I'm not blocking people that I know.
You have to have Gtalk installed.
Oh, so I can't use the Google.
Yeah, you have to have a Gtalk client installed.
Is there one?
If you don't have, I'm not sure. Anyway, that's I've made it work to that extent that I can send messages to and from a Gtalk session. Instant messaging, so I know it works there. But the goal is to make it work peer-to-peer so that somebody running a GWT Smalltalk session in a browser can send messages over XMPP to other people running GWT Smalltalk sessions in their browsers. And that requires that I do some more stuff down at the on the server side, down at the XMPP API.
So the interesting thing here is that you're sending messages to everybody connected to this client at once?
What happens is the message comes in. It doesn't come directly to your client. What happens is it goes to the server that you're running on. That's the server on the application engine. So I receive the message in there, and then I put it into the memory cache. At the moment, there's only one. I haven't looked at distributing the messages properly to the appropriate people. So basically, if you send a message to GWT Smalltalk, it'll be there for, I think it's 10 seconds. No, 5 seconds, I think it is. It'll be there for 5 seconds, and anybody that's polling at that time will pick up the message. So at the moment, it's just a test thing. Now, what will have to be done is it will look at the address, you know, who it's being sent to, and only somebody polling with that address on their receiving list will actually access it. But those are some details. I'm just trying to make it work at the moment, and it seems to work. The basic stuff seems to work. There's a lot of stuff with protocols that's going to have to be figured out, how to make, you know, the proper people to receive messages and make sure of security and all that kind of stuff.
Let me interject there, since you mentioned security. Yeah. The reason I wanted to do that is I got a question that came through in the IRC that there's since I mentioned that we were talking to you, I guess the question here was from Randall Schwartz. He said that he thought it looked like you could send arbitrary code up to get executed, and that looked kind of scary. So,
It is. Okay. Do you want to go on that theme right now? I mean, we can cover that right now.
We can come back to that. I just wanted to get that question.
Yeah, I'm totally aware of that. Sure. Yeah.
So why doesn't the XMPP client code live in the client so that each client can have its own address?
Yeah, okay. First of all, when you're running a JavaScript in the browser, the JavaScript only wants to do an HTTP request. You know, it doesn't want to open up. I don't think there's any facility in JavaScript to open up streams, open up sockets. If you have something like, the Flash Player. Flash Player can open up sockets. So you can write a client that runs in your browser, say in ActionScript, that can open up sockets, and that becomes a real XMPP client. you can't do that with JavaScript, and that's part of the design of the JavaScript or some limitation that's built into JavaScript. You can't open up a socket.
Well, you can make an HTTP connection.
It depends upon the browsers. My understanding is that browsers will normally open up two streams to the host. I think the latest ones, it's a maximum of eight simultaneous connections. But they are HTTP connections.
Yeah.
You know, so you can do a request, and so basically the way I do it now is I do a series of requests. Every 3 seconds I say, do you have anything new? Do you have anything new?
You can do like Comet, right?
Well, again, you know, I'm running on the application engine, Google's application engine, and I've listened to all their engineers talk, you know, all the videos they put on and so on. The one thing they don't want is a long poll. I mean, this has come up time and time again in the discussions on application engine. And the thing that uses resources is having leaving connections open. So that they don't want the Comet-type long poll. That will be replaced. Now, one thing, you know, that Google is pushing very hard on the HTML5, and they had this thing the other day, which I thought was neat, the Chrome plugin for Internet Explorer. And, of course, they have their Comet browser, and they're going to probably bring out this Comet operating system next year. HTML5 has other ways of doing it. They have this thing called a server sent event. So that in HTML5, you have a proper event mechanism from the host to the client. It's called a server sent event. There's actually a tag for it. And they also have WebSockets.
And now a short break for this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Niall Ross, our British Isles contributor, reports that in Dublin, Ireland, Enterprise People has a 6-month contract for a Smalltalk developer who also has experience with SQL. Experience that is considered a plus includes Linux and Rex. The notes in this position indicate that they also want Smalltalk development and support skills on a number of internal projects and good communication skills. London, UK, OTC Computing Limited has listed a Smalltalk possibility with the subtitle of OO Developer Physical Commodities Trading. They are looking for experience with OO systems, financial markets, OO analysis, logistics business, and refined products logistics plus/ settlement. This contract pays 500 to 550 British pounds per day. Quoting from the notes on this position, several OO languages, including Smalltalk mentioned, unique and interesting project defining scope of the future. Task is to develop a scalable physical commodities infrastructure. Strong OO analytical and scripting skills. Must have worked on physical commodities systems covering logistics of moving products, either in trading or in other software, and have strong understanding of finance. USA, San Luis Obispo, California. Strasbaugh has a permanent position for a software engineer manager who has experience with semiconductor manufacturing equipment, real-time operating systems, Smalltalk, ControlWorks, PLC programming, project management, and has a Master's of Science degree in computer science. The jobs listed in this report are just a few examples of these Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs, or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
For a second there, because I managed to send a message to Smalltalk, that app spot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
I haven't got it back the other way, but...
Okay, yeah. it works. It's clumsy. It's just a proof of concept at the moment. But, you know, that's the first step. So HTML5 has these WebSockets or server sent events, and I think those will be the mechanisms that will be used instead of this polling, because HTTP polling, the way I'm doing it now, you know, is you're putting in the header every time you do a poll. You're putting in a header and all kinds of nonsense, and all you want to know is one byte of information, is something available, yes or no. So it's a pretty clumsy way to do it. Anyway, HTML5 will, this question will become moot in a few years when HTML5 becomes much more accepted.
Yeah, I think it's getting pretty much accepted now. Even Microsoft's been talking about supporting the canvas tag, for example.
They don't have all of the choice because, again, Google brought out something you can plug into Internet Explorer.
Yeah,
and
it runs
the canvas, but very slowly. You can do the canvas stuff in Internet Explorer with a plugin, a JavaScript plugin from Google, but it's about 10 times slower than the other one.
Is the idea to have an Uber image so that everybody who connects to the application sees the same world?
Oh, no. No, basically, the image is created. I mean, the concept of the image, you know, the original concept of the image that they put on the Alto computer, where basically you have a memory image that you load up. No, that is not the way it works at all. I mean, the image, and actually in my code I do call it image, which is all of the structure of the objects and the classes and metaclasses and so on. That is generated when you upload code, basically Smalltalk code, and you compile it and then build up your image. But every person on the network doesn't have to see the same image. I mean, you can load from different libraries. Yeah, there's not sort of one huge image, because one of the problems with running things in browsers is people are very, very sensitive to load times.
Yeah.
You know, so if something takes 10 seconds to load, people say, you know, they're boring, I'm like, bye-bye, and they don't even start the program because it's taking too long to load. So one of the important limitations is keeping the executable small and keeping the amount of things that you load into the browser small. And the GWT compiler, the GWT compiler, does have a thing called asynchronous, what they call it, run asynchronous, which means that anything that's not being used at the moment is not loaded directly, on the initial startup. It's loaded when you call it. So that increases the load speed a lot. Right now, my JavaScript load is about 150K in the latest. If I put in the asynchronous loading, it'd probably go down to about 30 or 40K on the initial load. So, you know, again, this is one thing that I've watched Google over and over again about what they emphasize, and what they emphasize is startup time. And their studies say that, you know, if it goes past a second, you know, you've lost half your audience.
So can we go back to James's question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that security thing.
Yeah, okay. One of the things, when you have peer-to-peer programming, you know, say we have people sharing something, collaborative software over the network. If I send you something that I want you to execute. You know, if I send you a piece of data, okay, you can just examine it. But if I send you something that requires some code that is going to manipulate that data, we could do that right now with JavaScript. But JavaScript, there's no sort of protection. You load some JavaScript that somebody sent you, you evaluate it, and there's no protection against knowing what it's going to do. I mean, it could mess up your whole session, or it could steal information, could do all kinds of stuff.
That's why people use JSON.
Well, JSON, you know, is really for data. It's not code. It's not for executable code. It's for data.
It's specifically for that problem, though, of, okay,
well,
I receive some stuff that I can run as JavaScript, and I need to be sure that it's not going to do bad things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in JSON, in the latest version of the... which is 0.7.6, which I haven't uploaded yet. Yeah, there's a JSON parser. So the JSON parser means you're not executing JavaScript, you're just reading JavaScript, and then you're converting it into objects and so on. Yeah, so I have that in. It's JSON. And that's part of the GWT libraries, as a matter of fact. But I'm talking about when you want to send code that manipulates. You want to send executable code that manipulates objects. You know, the small talk idea of methods. So you want to send somebody some new data, and you want to send them the methods for manipulating the data at the same time, or vice versa, have them upload the methods from a library. If you do that in JavaScript, JavaScript prototype-based language, and basically you can get a hold of anything, any object that's in the window, or in the page, you can access it. What I'm working on right now is a remote object. And a remote object is you send somebody, or somebody can load from you, a remote object which is saying, here are the methods that I will accept. So when they execute their code, they're basically sending a method to a remote object. The remote object is communicating to your object. They don't see the implementation. They only see the interface. So if I send you a remote object and say, here, you can talk to this object, that object might send me something which might appear in a little window in my browser, you know, so that I control what happens to it, because this is all Smalltalk code.
Your answer is basically don't run foreign code in your program.
Don't run JavaScript. I can send you a remote object that I created the object, and I send you basically just what the method names are. You talk to those methods, I receive the code, and then I decide what to do with it. You don't run anything in my browser. So that gets past the security issue. So, I mean, I can choose to ignore. The method comes in and says, you know, Michael wants to execute this method. Well, so what?
You basically have that over XMPP. And in fact, in your example, you sent a message to the hello window.
Yeah. That is basically done by, you know, it receives the message in. It's text. It compiles the text and then runs it, okay? So if you say, you know, close all my windows and you'll do something terrible, it will actually do it. But no, the remote objects is a protocol I'm working on. And it's basically for this whole idea. If you have 20 people in a group and people want to share objects and they want to share methods, that this gives you a safe way of doing it. That basically,
so
if
are
I.
Are you going to do XMPP protocol for that? Like, are you going to put in
XMPP is the underlying transport.
Yeah, you know, I know, but you can.
Getting stuff from one place to another.
Yeah, but it's designed to use XML namespaces so that you can extend it with your own domain of messages anytime you want. Is that exposed in the whole Google Wave stuff, or is it sort of locked
in? You know, I haven't looked that deeply into. They only brought out XMPP support, I think, about 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago this Friday. So it's only been out for 2 weeks. So I've only looked at part of what they have.
Well, what were they doing before? Just protocol buff?
Well, they didn't have any method of going from, I mean, on the application engine, they didn't have any method of instant messaging between uh-huh. sessions. So this is new. I mean, they've been talking about it. They announced that in February. It was supposed to come out by June, but then it got delayed. It came out at the beginning. I think September 4th is when it came out. So it's new, and next week, I think it's Wednesday, September 30th, they're going to be releasing 100,000 licenses for Wave. So what Wave is sort of like XMPP with an attached document. So you have the instant messaging, and you have a document which is remembering all of the stuff that you've been talking about.
It seems like the messages you send over XMPP are to do with modifying the document.
That's correct, yeah. That seems to be that. And again, you know, Wave is very new. It's sort of when it was announced, I could immediately think of all kinds of places I'd like to use it, like in project scheduling and so on. Anything that has to do with scheduling, where you have multiple people and schedules change. I mean, this would be sort of the ideal mechanism, because quite often people want to collaborate together at the same time to see who's available. And then whoever comes in after has to look at what the history was and so on. So there are a number of application areas I'm sure that Wave is going to become used very quickly.
Yeah.
But, okay.
It's difficult to know whether it's really going to take off because of the lack of platform support. You know, you've got Python, you've got Java, and that's it.
Let me just, this isn't a completely fair comparison because they are somewhat different, but why would I want to use, you know, why would I want to run something on Google's App Engine and limit myself to Python and Java when I could just open up, say, an Amazon EC2 and throw whatever the heck I want there? I could put, you know, Java, I can put Smalltalk, I can put Squeak, I can put VisualWorks, you know, what have you. I can do whatever I want there.
Okay, Microsoft has a platform as well called Azure.
Yeah, that doesn't
I'm less familiar with that. because I figured most people would be familiar with it. Amazon's just a stand-in for why would I not run a virtual machine with whatever the heck I wanted on some service like that.
Yeah, especially PHP and so on. Yeah, I'll give you a couple answers. One of them is just cost, or one of them is the availability, because Google gives you a free quota. I think it's something like 6.5 hours per day of free CPU time, plus a gigabyte of incoming bandwidth, outgoing bandwidth, and so on, a gigabyte of storage. They give you a free quota, which is totally free, and you could actually put up a small application, pay nothing, and Amazon doesn't have that. Same thing, Microsoft doesn't have that. So part of it is, you know, you can, there's a no cost. You can try out new applications at no cost for the service, initially anyway. The second thing is that it's a question of scalability. Now, I haven't used the Amazon the Amazon, sorry, what do they call it, EC2, I think it is?
That's the virtual machine technology, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What I understand is that you have to specify the amount of resource that you want, you know, and then you can go in increments, but you have to deliberately increase your increment. That's my understanding in any case. The app engine is totally scalable. If you're using no resource at all, you don't get billed for anything. Like when I run things on the application engine, I can look at my usage and I can see what percentage of the free quota I have, or if I went over the free quota and have to pay something. But it's totally scalable. There's no point in the application engine where you have to say, I need more allocation of resources. You can say an upper limit. You know, I don't want to go beyond, say, $10 a day, $100 a day, $1,000 a day in cost. You can put an upper limit on cost. But there's no mechanism or requirement for you to go in there and say, I want to increase my allocation for bandwidth or storage or CPU time or whatever. I mean, it's totally automatic. So I have only seen a couple of people that have talked about comparing one platform to another. And the comments I've seen are the application engine is much easier to scale. But, you know, it may be that the Amazon, that people, a lot of people use the Amazon because it runs PHP and so on. But here we get into, you could do it. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't. But I don't see the lack of different languages on the back end as being any kind of problem.
Now a short interlude for this week's Squeak News with Randall Schwartz.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Following on from their high-profile presence at ESUG this year, the Argentinian Smalltalk community are preparing to host their third annual domestic Smalltalk conference, Smalltalks 2009. Running from the 19th to the 21st of November in Buenos Aires, the conference's goal is to gather both the Argentine and international Smalltalk community to get connected, sharing our work and experience with regards to Smalltalk or related topics. The conference will have two streams: research and education for research and education work done within Smalltalk in universities and public or private entities, and industry and development for presentations related to Smalltalk software developed by companies or individuals, both public and private. In addition, the event will host a Smalltalk programming contest. As in previous years, well-known personalities from the international community will attend the conference. All those connected with Smalltalk, be it faculty, students, researchers, developers, or entrepreneurs, are invited to participate, free of charge, as presenters and members of this audience. In addition, early registrants get a great-looking T-shirt for free, so get your bookings in now. For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
I've got 2 points I've got a point and a question. So,
yeah.
XMPP network protocol, anyone can talk it, and Google Wave may end up being a fairly open protocol. It's one thing to say it is open, it's another thing for other people to actually embrace it and use it. So, if that's true, then you know programs like TextMate and TextEdit and will eventually be able to talk to Google Wave, get documents, submit changes, collaborate. And, of course, then you've got the Google Wave client in the web browser to do the same thing as well. So that that could potentially be really interesting for everyone. You know, even source code editing, you could say, well, okay, I'm going to store my source code in Google Wave.
You could do that. Hey, that would be excellent. Actually, that's a good application for it.
Interesting way to collaborate. So, So my question then, back to GWT Smalltalk. What do you see doing with this? Because you are programming not in Smalltalk to make a Smalltalk environment that lets you program in Smalltalk.
Yeah, yeah.
Is your goal to store the source code in a Google Wave document and have, I don't know, some slash application name to actually run an application written by someone in Smalltalk?
Okay, what I have, and this will be in the next upload, which will be 0.7.6, is I have this virtual file system, which is it looks like a Unix file system. It's actually a series of entries in the Google Bigtable database. So the back end, where you store stuff at the moment, I don't see a reason for putting this stuff in Wave, is you store stuff in the Google database, which is Big Engine. But, you know, forget about how it works underneath. It looks like a file system. I have this thing called a virtual file system. So basically you open up new directories, new libraries, and so on. You store your code, and you can load the code and so on. To to the programming interface, it looks like you have a file system underneath, but in reality, what you have is a database, the Google Bigtable database.
So
with.
If I wanted to build an application, let's say this is a working environment, all the classes are fleshed out, string, what's it called? String something like that?
String builder?
It's called RunStream, you know.
Okay, whatever.
So say it's all exists, and I write a little application.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How would I deploy it? Because obviously you don't want to pay for my application.
Oh, yeah, okay. One thing I did, you know, before I got into writing the GWT Smalltalk stuff was I was trying, remember the application engine came out, I think, April of 2008. So it's been out a little over, say, about a year and a half. So I was trying all kinds of ways that you could set up environments for people to write, to quickly deploy web applications. In other words, supposing you have in a corporation, you have a big product launch, or you have a convention or something, you want to put up a website very quickly, you want to use it for a few days, maybe 2 weeks, then there's no point in having it anymore. There's all these sort of one-off or quick deployment type scenarios where people want to put up a website which has maybe a lot of traffic for a short period of time. And so I was trying different ways of doing that on App Engine, and I got a way working which worked quite well, which is you put in the application name, whatever the application is, something appspot.com, and then after the slash, you put in the name of your particular website, and it goes to the database and figures out what all the code was for that, and then puts that up. So actually, I had that working, and yeah, that'll be the way. If people want to put up websites with GWT Smalltalk, yeah, I'll add that mechanism in.
But hey,
so basically,
doesn't that mean that? Okay, so I would still deploy GWT Smalltalk under my own something.appspot.com.
It would be if you want to, you know, have it to michael.com.
Well, I'm just wondering, because I could happily host a giant application on your GWT Smalltalk and use your money.
Well, no, because it's watching how much you use. It'd be watching because, you know, I know all the transactions that are going through. Like if you're doing an application, I know that this is going through whatever your application name is. And, you know, keep track of that and make sure that you get charged for it if you go beyond a certain amount.
So you would charge on?
It'd be one area that I see is having commercial potential is you host a lot of things. You support the language. You support all the tools. And you support, of course, the database and all that kind of stuff. And you add 5% onto the charge or, you know, a percentage onto the charge as an administration fee. And it takes away all of setting up you know, anything with an IPS or ISP rather, with an internet service provider, you have to get in touch with them. You have to sign a contract. You have to get your own passwords. Your own, you know, you have to set up your own environment and so on. So for a small application, it's really a hassle.
It's really interesting because this is sort of, I mean, Google's sort of open but not open about all this stuff. You really have to play in their world. And as you've said, you're writing this program in Java.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that we've got the same sort of stuff for Amazon Web Services, but it's all written in Smalltalk, and it really is open. There's definitely some sort of competition brewing between these two companies.
Oh, yeah, and also between Microsoft and Google. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of competition going on right now.
Honestly, it's a joke to include Microsoft in this domain.
Oh, okay. I'm not talking about Azure or whatever they call it. Microsoft, they want to trap you. I know as soon as you get in there, you'll pay for the rest of your life. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll disagree slightly with Michael there that while, yes, Microsoft has stumbled, just based on Microsoft's history in various areas, I don't know that I would count them out. I mean, they seem to have stumbled, but bear in mind that back in the early 90s, a lot of people counted IBM out of a lot of games too.
But remember, they went from, 425,000 employees down to 200,000. I mean, they lost half their employees.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying that Microsoft – I'm not saying Microsoft might not face problems. I'm just saying that in terms of long-term influence, I wouldn't necessarily count them out. I think eventually they'll refocus on something. I'm just not sure what it will be.
Yeah,
it's just that they're trying to enter into a realm of technology that they've got no experience with. We're talking about large, hosted, scalable mainframe systems.
Yeah.
They just don't know anything about that stuff. Yep. I mean, they make desktop software, and they've done that for a long time, and they do that well. And everything else they've tried, they've failed at. I'll take that back. They succeeded with the Xbox 360. They failed with the Xbox, but they succeeded with the Xbox 360. And now I don't know how they did that. That was a fluke.
Well, anyway, I don't spend a whole lot of time concerning myself with the future of Microsoft. They'll survive or not.
When you're talking about these new, these new paradigms.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
let's try to take this to some kind of conclusion then. What's next for GWT Smalltalk?
Okay, what I have now, the next thing is the file system, because, you know, if you want to write an application, there's no way to do it now. I mean, there's no place to store it. So that'll be out, part of it might be out today. It'll be out in the next few days anyway. So that you'll be able to, when I say it'll be out that I can put stuff in there. It might take a few, might take a few days longer before I have it so that you log in with your Google account. That's a Gmail account. You could make one up if you want, just to try it out. Then you log in, and then you have your own storage space in the Bigtable database. So you can put in your own scripts and so on. So that'll be out in a few days. After that, I'll put in some of the basic animation stuff.
What's Google going to think about that? If you ask us to hand over our credentials to you, and then you access Bigtable on our behalf, that seems like a big security hole.
Well, the way that works is, in the application engine, when I set up a link, I request the application engine to give me a URL, to give me a link, and then I post that so that when you click on that, you go to a Google page. It's not my page. You go to the Google page. You log in the Google environment. Then it comes back. It then comes back to my application, and all I can see is that you are logged in. Like, the only thing I can see is your mail, email address, and I think the other thing is the nickname. And I can tell whether you are...
Now you have access to Bigtable. Is that all of Bigtable or just Bigtable for your application?
Well, it's Bigtable for my application. Anybody that would be running, you know, if I put up GWT Smalltalk and you set up your own own website under my GWT Smalltalk stuff, obviously I can see the data you put in there. So, I mean, that's not secure from the point, if you have any secret data. But, I mean, most people that are putting up a website, what you see on the website is what they have in the database normally. You could set up your own, you could just recompile it and run it under your own name.
That's really interesting that you can't petition it. So you can't say, GWT Smalltalk for this user's credentials data. And then, you know, it is protected.
Well, I can do that, so that you only have to go down the path that includes your mail name, and that the mount point or the pseudo mount point for your view of the database starts at your Gmail name, so that beyond that you can only see what's below that, you can't see what's above that. I mean, there'll be some protection in there, but if you're doing financial information or people's credit card numbers or something, I wouldn't put it into that kind of a database. I mean, you should set up your own secure version of it, which means, you know, that's one reason I'm open sourcing the code, so that people can use it for...
I just find that fascinating, because Google's all about having the data open and all that kind of stuff. I just find it amazing that the data isn't owned by the Gmail address, not by your application.
Well, it is. It's owned by my Gmail address.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a combination of your application and their Gmail address that gives you a Bigtable.
You know, they're constantly adding features and so on to the application engine and to, they're adding all kinds of other features. And that might be one in the future, that you have a partitioned database, you know, with secure access through your own. So it's sort of an application database that you have to have your own password and so on to access that portion of it. They don't have that yet. I don't see it as a problem right now, because there are not that many applications running on Google Application Engine.
Yeah.
But to get back to what the GWT Smalltalk is all about, I mean, I'm going to be adding the some animations, basic animations. I'll be probably adding the canvas tag, so that if you do have HTML5, that you can run some of that stuff. I'll be putting in more widgets, like tree widget buttons and that kind of stuff. But the main thing is, you know, it's at a point where you can start to write applications, and the main thing for that is having the being able to store it in the database, storing your application code in the database. So I think that the first things I'll be looking at are probably some online games and so on. And I'd like to set up some sample applications, such as for project scheduling and so on. When we talk about Google Wave, everybody's going to be concentrating on the Google Wave client. you know, and I see all these reactions to Google Wave, and people say it's slower, they don't like the way the thing scrolls or whatever. That's all about the client. It's all about the.
There's going to be a lot of people doing Facebook type stuff on there.
Yeah, yeah. So I see the opening, as you say, the market opening, as once people start using Wave, they're going to start to want to write their own applications. And if you're going to write applications for Wave, it's hard to do that kind of stuff in JavaScript. And I think people will start to realize that pretty quickly.
Okay, so you're kind of trying to add something like scripting for the rest of us, if you will.
Yeah, basically going back to the original, and the reason Smalltalk is useful in this environment is you have to go back to Park, and the original design of Smalltalk was it was a scripting language for messaging over a network. And that's what we have today. We have a network with 1.6 billion people. Virtually all of them are running JavaScript, or they'd have to be if they're running a browser. And, you know, you need a language that talks about sending messages between people. And that's, you know, that was the design goal of Smalltalk, as I understand it, in the first place.
Okay. Well, I think that's probably about as good a summary as we'll get out of that. So that's okay. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, okay. Thanks
a lot for coming on the podcast, Peter.
Yeah, it's been good talking to you.
Good to talk to you again. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretations podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.